This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, sitting in for Terry Gross. Our hip-hop week concludes now with the RZA. He's the chief composer and producer of the Wu-Tang Clan, which he co-founded in 1992 with his cousin, known as GZA the Genius, and several of their friends, including Method Man and Old Dirty Bastard, who died in 2004. The Wu-Tang Clan's name was taken from a mythical martial arts sword style, said to be exceptionally difficult to master, but unbeatable in battle. The Rolling Stone History of Rock and Roll says, quote, "The Wu-Tang Clan established a hip-hop empire with street poetics, kung fu mythology, ingenious production, and entrepreneurial savvy. The outfit's rugged beats and top-notch emceeing have taken the two turntables and a mic foundations to its grimiest and arguably most artistic extreme," unquote. The RZA has appeared in the Jim Jarmusch film, Coffee and Cigarettes. He's composed music for several films, including Jarmusch's film Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, and Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill and its sequel. Terry spoke to the RZA in 2005. They started with a track from the Wu-Tang Clan.
I grew up on the crime side, the New York Times side. Staying alive was no job, had second hands. Moms bounced on old men, so then we moved to Shaolin Land. A young youth, you're rocking the go-to. Low goose, only way I began to G-York was drug loot. And let's start it like this, son. Rolling with this one and that one. Pulling out gas for fun. But it was just a dream for the team who was a fiend. Started smoking rules at 16. And running up. And doing hits by high stakes, making my way on fire skates. No question, I was speed for cracks and weed. The combination made my eyes bleed. No question, I will flow up and try to get the door.
That's the Wu-Tang Clan. My guest is the RZA. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, y'all.
Now, you know, in addition to being, you know, an MC and to being one of the rappers with Wu-Tang Clan, you were also the chief producer and arranger. Can you talk a little bit about composing and sampling the music backing for the records? What your approach is to that?
Well, my musical knowledge really came from being a DJ. You know, at the age of 11, I got my first pair of turntables, straight arm techniques, you know what I mean? The hardest ones that you could scratch on. And I was in, building up an extensive record collection. Even as a DJ with a four-track, my production style was similar to the style you hear on 36 Chambers, which was taking something from old soul music to something from a funky drum, you know, whether James Brown or Willie Mitchell-type drum pattern, and then come with maybe a Woody Woodpecker record, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then mix that in with some kind of classical. So I was a kind of DJ that would do that. When I would DJ at parties, you know, when I would interlude between records, I may throw on a Peter Pan quote or something, and then throw on a crazy hip-hop gutter beat that makes the crowd go crazy. So when I start producing, I had that same approach.
You know, you do something on some of your music that I think you call a detuned piano. And listening to it, I never knew whether it was an electric piano or what, but it has this really distinctive sound. And in fact, I want to play something from the Jim Jarmusch movie, Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, and you did the score for this movie, and it's really,
yeah, that's my first score.
Yeah, and it's really wonderful. Let me play the theme from it. That's music from the Jim Jarmusch movie, Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, composed by my guest, the RZA. What are you doing on that? What's the keyboard that we're hearing?
The keyboard that I use for Ghost Dog, I use a combination, but I use mostly, it's a keyboard called the Kurzweil 2500, and there's another keyboard called the Insonic ASR-10. And the Ghost Dog theme, the doo-doo, it sounds like it was a partial of a flute sample, just took it out, just one frequency of it, and then played across the piano. So that was how I came up with that right there, mixed in with some muddy string pads and a muddy string guitar sample. So it was a pretty awkward combination. But the sound of it, it's funny, when I made that particular song, the sound of it was to go along with Ghost Dog had a lot of birds in this movie, you know. And reading, studying music, I read about Peter and the Wolf and how the composer used an instrument to reflect each animal. For instance, when the wolf came, he threw on the trombones. When the bird came, he threw on the flute. So this is why on the Ghost Dog theme, you hear that flute in there, because he had a lot of birds. And when the movie first came on, the bird was flying. So I started with that flute sound so you could feel that joyfulness. But it's also put into a RZA context. It was joy mixed with sorrow and morbid.
Morbidity, did you say? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, there's something very eerie about the theme.
Right. I wanted to be like to capture, you know, the spirituality of the bird, but also to capture like the internal of Ghost Dog. You know what I mean?
He's
a very troubled individual, really.
So you use the word detuned. What do you mean by detuned, and what is detuned in the music?
You know, when the piano gets old, right, and it sits in your studio for a long time, it becomes detuned, meaning, you know, all the notes are maybe not a half step, but maybe a one-eighth of a step just out of tune, mm-hmm. in the proper chromatic order. And I like that sound. You know, most people come in and go, I need to tune the keyboard, or I need to tune the piano, or tune the guitar. I like it when it's detuned, because that means it's not in the musical harmony according to the theory of music, but yet it has a harmony of its own. And that's something that I use a lot throughout my whether I sampled the sound or whether I played it. That's the sound I use a lot.
You know, it's funny, like your influences, you have so many influences musically, but conceptually too. You know, like one of the really big influences in your life is martial arts movies and samurai stories. And what would you say has been the influence of martial arts movies on you as a performer or as an artist?
Oh man, I think martial art movies have given me a tremendous amount of influence and inspiration. I mean, not only from the beautiful fight scenes and the beautiful art they display, but even the storylines and the heroic way that the martial art films pit their characters. You know, you'll see one man fighting 10 men, you know what I mean? Or you'll see three men up against an army, and each one will die for each other no matter what. Like, I got it, brother, you leave. No, brother, you leave. And you see that kind of loyalty in the film. That inspired me. And also the music and the stings and the stabs that used to come out of nowhere, because a fight scene has to be edited, and so therefore the music had to be edited to match the fight scenes. And they had a very abstract flow of music in these movies. So I had a lot of inspiration on that.
What were the movie theaters that you went to when you were a kid to see the martial art films?
Oh, 42nd Street was flooded with kung fu movies during maybe from the year of 1979 to the year of 1984. I mean, you could go on 42nd Street, and if it was maybe a dozen theaters on that one strip, showing, you know, with two or three screens inside these theaters, you could bet that there was at least 15 martial art films on the strip at any given moment. And I'm the kind of kid that would go to the movies and watch three martial art films at one screen, come back the next day, go across the street and watch the three that they had, you know what I mean? And so I was a fiend, and 42nd Street was like the capital of that.
How old were you? You were living in one of the boroughs, either Brooklyn or...
Yeah, Brooklyn and Staten Island, back and forth.
So how old were you when you could go by yourself or with friends on the subway to get to Manhattan?
Well, I'm a street kid. I was riding the subways by myself by the age of 9. New York is like that. You know, growing up with a single parent and a house full of brothers and sisters. I come from a family of 11 brothers and sisters. So you could imagine the kind of independency that fell on some of us as children, you know what I mean? By the time I was 11 years old, I was taking myself and my little 7-year-old brother with me, and my 6-year-old brother, all the way from Brownsville, Brooklyn, to 42nd Street, Manhattan. That's like a 45-minute train ride. And we'll get off and go to the movies. And the movies actually have signs on it, 17 and older only. And I'll have to ask a stranger on the street to buy my tickets and all that just to get inside the theater and sit there and watch some kung fu films. It's strange how the urges of it is like almost as strong as the urge of sex. You know what I mean? And, you know, a sex urge leads men to all kind of foul malpractices, from rape to suicide if a man get his heart broke like that. So imagine that same kind of drive and urge for martial arts and for the study of knowledge and for music and hip-hop. It's like, that's the kind of urges I had. And, it was kind of a blind urge, too, because I really didn't understand it until now. I see that, wow, what a path that was chosen for me.
Okay, so you just had this instinctive urge to hear music, to go wherever you had to hear the music you wanted to hear, and to go as far as you needed to see the movies you wanted to see. And that was an incredible education for you, particularly in the field that you are in, which is music.
Yeah, exactly.
And movies, because you write scores for movies. What was actual school like for you, where you were officially supposed to be getting your education?
Well, in school, I made a lot of teachers, they was very impressed with me, but I wasn't a very attendant student, you know what I mean? I mean, any given year, whether it was even living with my mother from poverty and from the times we suffered, you know, with so many brothers and sisters, and it's like, I mean, I would miss 40 days out of any given school year. And when I became a high school student, I basically, you know, the first year, I kind of tried to stay focused, and it was hard. I mean, it was times when I didn't have a nickel to catch the bus to go to school. And the school was maybe like a 45-minute to an hour walk. And, you know, going through all that, the first year, I struggled, and I made the honor roll, and they offered me a scholarship to write. And, you know, I was on the school newspaper and all them things. But by the time my sophomore year, I was a hooky playing, 40-ounce drinking, girl chasing, give up on school, trying to find a way to make a dollar, trying to find a way to hustle. But what saved me, I think, in the long run, was whether I went to school or not, I would always study. So I may wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning and go, I'm not going to school, but still sit there for 2 hours and read and study first before I go outside.
You were writing rhymes. You started writing rhymes when you were about 9, I think.
Yeah, I wrote my first lyric. I stole them from the age of 8 to 9, but at 9, I wrote my first lyric. Yeah.
So do you remember what your first lyric was?
I kind of remember. It was something like, yeah, you see the girl with the biggest breasts. You know what I mean? Oh, I would like to get my hands under her dress. It was definitely straight up, you know, the wrong thing to think about. But, you know, it was sex fantasy.
Even when you were 9?
Oh, man. You could imagine growing up in the hood. I mean, 9 years old, you tried things at 9 years old, yo. I mean, I want to get to into my personal life and get psychological, but, I mean, I tried at the age of 9, and I know at the age of 11 I was successful at doing what I wanted to do. By the time I got to 11, I knew many things about women already. Huh. So that's just growing up poor. Somebody told me that. I was talking to Quentin Tarantino. We had a long talk about this, right? And he said, I was talking about how my children don't seem to be like me. Like, you know, at the age of 9, I already had marijuana in my system. Drinking 40 ounces, I mean 30, I mean it was only quarts back then, drinking 32 ounces of Old English. And I was only 9 years old, smoking joints and stuff like that. So it's like, I look at my son, I have a 9-year-old son right now. He don't know nothing about nothing. And it seemed like his life is totally oblivious to where I was at that age. And I was talking to Quentin about that, like, you know, trying to like ponder and understand. He basically kind of gave me some insight. He said that when you were poor, you don't get a chance to truly live your childhood out. There's so many things on your mind, so many things that's pulling you. And sex is probably one of the best, cures or regression, you know, sex and drugs from the problems of the world. So he pointed that out to me. And I was like, you might be right, because now that my children, you know, they have everything they want, and, you know, they basically the children of a millionaire. And so they play with Godzilla all day. They playing with toys. Right now, when by the time we was 9 or 10, when I grew up, you seen a gun in your hand already, you know?
Well, I really want to thank you so much for talking with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
The RZA spoke with Terry in 2005.